Hey, thank you for choosing to spend some time with us here at Awake the Iron. These podcasts are also posted as videos on our website, so be sure to visit awaketheiron.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the Awake the Iron Academy. You'll never be bored again as you explore vast archives of videos, interviews, documents, lectures, humor, and more, covering an ever-increasing range of topics. Think of it like a self-guided, self-paced college, but without the mountains of debt. We would also love to hear from you, and you can do that two ways, either through the website contact form, or leave us a voice message by calling the Awake the Iron hotline. That's 601-654-IRON.
Hi, everyone. This is Karis, and I'm happy to be back on the show, Awake the Iron, which is concerned with deception and finding out truth. And I'm here to do a book report. So I know that Kaysen encourages people to, research things for themselves. I'm the same way. It's like, I like to share what I've learned, but I also believe, like, don't take my word for it. Look at the evidence for yourself. I've always been sort of a truth, facts, evidence kind of person. And so I dug into a topic that made me very curious when I first heard about it. As if you've never heard of it, it might surprise you as well. But let me go ahead and share what the book is. It is, there it is, Operation Paperclip by Annie Jacobson. And I guess you can see the subtitle is The Secret Intelligence Program That Brought Nazi Scientists to America. So yeah, when I first heard about that, it was like, wait, didn't they all face trial and like execution or imprisonment? At least the ones who were tried and convicted of pretty horrific things, right? Well, first a quick word. Annie Jacobson, the author, is a journalist. She's a Princeton graduate. And I wanted to show you, I think it's important to document your work. Anybody can just write a book, but, that's what you said, but how do I know? So I'm going to show you right here. I meant to have this set up sooner, but okay, here's the whole book. Oh, sorry, I got the backgrounds on, so it's kind of funky, but you can see that much of the book, 100 pages, is her bibliography and endnotes. So she's pretty stickler for documenting all her stuff, which I think is really good. So yes, so you already heard sort of the subtitle of what this is about. So after World War II, the U.S. brought Nazi scientists to the U.S., and many of these men were at least accused or suspect of like the potential to have been involved with war crimes. Some stood trial at Nuremberg, and some of those were even convicted. So how that works is some were already working for the U.S. before the trial even happened. Like, I think it took a while for those to all happen. And then maybe they were convicted after, and it was like, oh, oops, get him out of here. But then others, was the other way around, at least in one case, in her report, that they stood trial, but then got early release, which is a whole other story from their sentence, which is kind of a whole other story. There was a U.S. High Commissioner to Germany called John McCloy, who, when in another phase of this program called Accelerated Paperclip, he was anxious to get certain people to the U.S. And so he granted clemency to several of those convicted of war crimes to make it easy for them to come work in the U.S. Okay, so why would this even happen? Like, why do this? Well, I think there's two main ideas. One was to get the intel and knowledge, you know, the technology that these people had and make it work for the U.S. So when it first, like when the war in Europe first ended, there was still the Pacific battle going on. So we wanted to have an advantage there. And then there was still Russia. So even though we were technically allied in the war, you know, Russia was still a threat and not, you know, the Cold War was going to happen soon. Not that they knew that, but, you know, we knew there was not friendliness between our countries. And so they could be dangerous, a dangerous power to us too. So it was to have an advantage and then also to prevent Russia from getting that, the same information, the same power. So kind of makes sense. Like at first I was like, it's so unethical, there's no reason. Well, it still might be unethical, but there is at least a reason or two. So I will grant that. So the champions of this idea were the War Department and some other government agencies. And probably the most opposing agency was the State Department, you know, which is concerned with national security and that type of thing. So they didn't like the idea as much. The first committee that was formed to kind of hash this out outlined a plan to give contracts to a few German scientists. Here's a quote, provided they were not known or alleged criminals, unquote, or quote, ardent Nazis, unquote. Then a subsequent agency under the Joint Intelligence Committee later removed those qualifiers. So clearly they had their eye on some people who had more associated with them serious issues and wanted to not make it that difficult. Okay, there was a guy, Samuel Klaus, he was the State Department officer assigned to this agency, and he had the chance to interview hundreds of civilians in Germany during the war because of his time there. And I'm going to read something he said. Okay, so Klaus, starting the quote, had developed the belief that many, quote, ordinary Germans, unquote, had profited from the Nazi party and had had a tacit understanding of what was happening to the Jews. In his role as the State Department representative in the JIOA, side note, which is this agency I'm talking about, okay, back to my quote, Klaus argued that the Germans at issue were not brilliant scientists who had been unwittingly caught in a maelstrom of evil, but rather that they were amoral opportunists of mediocre talent. So that was his argument. And there were others that sided with him. But around this time, apparently, this resistance was to be undermined by none other than the Commerce Department. Okay, how does that work? Well, the Commerce Department had designed a program to stir up national excitement about what they were calling a form of reparations, namely acquiring German science and technology for free to bring prosperity and jobs to America. So, yay! And, you know, part of this was the military-related benefits, but those were just conveniently placed on a classified list. So it wasn't common knowledge, as were the other technologies like developing hose that wouldn't run, you know, for women, or, you know, there, that was one of the things I read. Anyway, some interesting things. But yay. So, you know, get people excited about this sort of like making them pay for, you know, the problems of the war through helping bring prosperity to the U.S. Okay. All right. Now, why the name Operation Paperclip? That comes from the use of a paperclip to mark the troublesome files to keep those recruits away from the State Department, you know, where they would have to go through a visa process, and put those people in military custody instead. And often this even allowed the scientists to stay longer than those who went about the proper visa process, interestingly. All right, so to give some detail about who were some of these people and what were they involved with, both before and after the war. There was a lot. There's a lot in here. A lot of it's disturbing and difficult to read what people did to other human beings. But I picked two just to keep it short and concise and just give you an idea. So one example of military technology or weaponry that the U.S. Wanted was V rockets. And I'm going to read a quote here. Okay, starting my quote. When General Wolfe saw the vast numbers of V weapons left behind, he became even more convinced that a U.S. program to exploit Nazi science had to happen now. And continuing on, not only did the United States military need to act immediately to capture Nazi armaments, Wolf said, but America needed to hire the, quote, German scientists and engineers, unquote, who had created the weapons and put them to work in America. And quoting him, if steps to this end are taken, the double purpose of preventing Germany's resurgence as a war power and advancing our own industrial future may be served. And his quote and the whole quote that I'm reading. So I think this sounds like this was happening, you know, pretty soon, right at the beginning of, well, right when the war ended. So the acting quickly to advance their own industrial future. Now, he used the word industry, but maybe he meant it in the war context too. But yeah, that was interestingly how the Commerce Department was trying to spread that. And then they said also to prevent Germany's resurgence as a war power. So I didn't list that as an objective earlier, but clearly that would be another benefit they saw, was to, you know, take away the advanced technologies that Germany had so they couldn't quickly rise as a military power again. Okay, so that does make sense, but let's go on. Okay, so these V rockets that he's talking about, they were built in an underground factory, you know, to avoid bombing and such, at a place called Nordhausen. And the factory was called Mittelwerk, which is German for middle works. The manpower was supplied by a concentration camp nicknamed Dora. And the conditions at this factory, well, not to mention they were already slaves, right? But the conditions were deplorable. There was so much, all kinds of disease, starvation, lack of light, ventilation, water, hazards of the work itself, you know, heavy equipment and so on. But I'm going to read a quote here. The dead were replaceable. Humans and machine parts went into the tunnels. Rockets and corpses came out. Workers who were slow on the production lines were beaten to death. Insubordinates were garroted or hanged. After the war, war crimes investigators determined that approximately half of the 60,000 men eventually brought to Nordhausen were worked to death. Just, it's so awful. 30,000 men. So one of the people associated with this factory and slave labor was Arthur Rudolph. And I'm going to read, she has a little summary of like each of the main characters in the back of the book here. So I'm going to read this paragraph about Arthur Rudolph. Quote, operations director at Mittelwerk Slave Labor Facility in Nordhausen, he specialized in B weapons assembly and oversaw slave laborer allocation. Under Operation Paperclip, he worked for the U.S. Army at Fort Bliss, Texas, and became project manager for the Saturn V. In 1980, he was investigated by the Department of Justice and left America in 1984 to avoid prosecution. Now, Rudolph worked under Wernher von Braun. That's a name that I had heard early on when I first learned of this program. Ended up working with our space program. So Wernher von Braun directed V weapons development for the German army. Records show that von Braun was fully complicit in the procuring slave labor from the concentration camps. So yeah, there's some notes, even his own words, of going to one of the concentration camps to look for skilled people for the factory. So this is following some of this information she gave, showing that von Braun was helping to procure, or at least ordering the procurement of slave labor. Okay, so quote, in December of 1944, with slave laborers dying by the thousands in the Mittelwerk tunnels and V-2 rockets crashing into civilian population centers, causing mayhem and terror across Europe, it would have been hard to imagine that some of those directly responsible would ever be regarded as individuals of great value to the United States. And yet, in less than a year, Arthur Rudolph, Georg Ricci, Wernher von Braun, Major General Walter Dornberger, and other rocket engineers would secretly be heading to America to work. In the last days of World War II, few would ever have believed such a thing. End quote. In fact, I could not believe such a thing. Okay, von Braun would later work for the U.S. Army and be chief architect of the Saturn V launch vehicle that propelled Americans to the moon. So, had some notable, you know, what do you call it, achievement, the two of them, Rudolph and von Braun, in the U.S. for, you know, doing the Saturn V here. And yet, you know, what they had done before, I find it difficult to rationalize the ethics of that. Okay. Well, another technology and another person I'll use as an example was chemicals. So one company, a chemical company, IG Farben, if you do any of your own research around this, or actually it has its tendrils into these things, just they connect in interesting ways, but you'll come across IG Farben in other research. This company created the deadly gas called Tabun, T-A-B-U-N, as well as Zyklon B, which was used in the concentration camps. Otto Ambros was a chemist for IG Farben, and he helped discover sarin gas, which you may have heard of, and other incidents, you know, that have been in the news in the past couple decades. And he managed the company's slave labor factory at Auschwitz. Ambros was tried and convicted at Nuremberg, got an early release, and then worked for the U.S. Chemical Corporation, W.R. Grace, as well as the U.S. Department of Energy, and later for European governments and private businesses. Okay, so a lot of this information was not known to most people at the time. And in fact, I think there was something started to leak out about this program, and quickly the people in power moved to try to, you know, paint it a lot softer than it was, you know, like interviewing some of these scientists, showing them as nice, normal people. Oh, you know, these aren't terrible war criminals, and so on. To sort of, you know, just try to give good PR for it. But in 1998, there was a law requiring US government agencies to release classified federal records relating to Nazi war criminals. And there was an interagency working group that oversaw the review of over 8 million pages of records. Shoo! And I thought this book was long, 500 pages or whatever. Okay. And I'm going to read here. A little bit about that. Okay, quote, the documentation revealed a vast web of profitable relationships between hundreds of Nazi war criminals and U.S. military and intelligence agencies. In 2005, in a final report to Congress, U.S. intelligence and the Nazis, that's the name of the report, the interagency working group determined that, quoting their finding, the notion that they, editorial note, the U.S. military and the CIA, they employed only a few, quote, bad apples, unquote, will not stand up to the new documentation. It's the end of their quote of the findings. Continuing on, in hindsight, wrote the interagency working group, the government's use of Nazis was a very bad idea and, quoting them, there was no compelling reason to begin the post-war era with the assistance of some of those associated with the worst crimes of the war. End of that quote. Reading on, and yet history now shows us that that is exactly what the American government did and continued to do throughout the Cold War. In the decades since Operation Paperclip ended, new facts continue to come to light. In 2008, previously unreported information about Otto Ambros emerged, serving as a reminder that the story of what lies hidden behind America's Nazi scientist program is not complete. A group of medical doctors and researchers in England, working on behalf of an organization called the Thalidomide Trust, believe they have tied the wartime work of I.G. Farben and Otto Ambros to the thalidomide tragedy of the late 1950s and early 1960s. End of that section of the book, of the quote. Okay, so if you have not heard of thalidomide, briefly, I believe it was used as a drug to give women for morning sickness or something. I might have that wrong, but somehow women who were expecting, and then there were all these children born like missing limbs, and it was really sad. So interesting that that was tied to this same Ambros who developed chemical weapons and managed slave labor factories. Whew. Yeah, it's heavy stuff. But okay, one more interesting thing to note is at the time this book was published, there were some awards being given in space-related agencies that were named for Operation Paperclip scientists, even after some of their crimes came to light. Let's see, let me check their names real quick. One of them was the Hubertus Struhold Award, given by the Space Medicine Association in America. And so like even after there was some published information about some of his nefarious activities, they still continue to give out this award. Another one is the National Space Club Florida Committee gives an award called the Dr. Kurt H. Debus Award. And I think I won't go into what he's done, but anyway, other stuff came out about him, and they just still, and when people were asked, like, why do you still give these awards? It's like, oh, well, look at all the stuff he accomplished. He's a good American. Here, simple as it is, I'm reading this quote. Simple as it is, Kurt Debus is an honored American, Griffin says. Yeah, it's like they just kind of just ignore the past. I'm going to just close with reading a couple things from the last page of the book. Yeah, so jumping in, quote, Wernher von Braun, Arthur Rudolph, Kurt Debus, and Hubertus Strughold led the American effort to get man to the moon. The question remains, despite a man's contribution to a nation or a people, how do we interpret a fundamental wrong? Is the American government at fault equally for fostering myths about its paperclip scientists, for encouraging them to whitewash their past so that their scientific acumen could be exploited for U.S. weapons-related work? When, for a nation, should the end justify the means? These are questions that can only be answered separately by individuals. But as facts emerge and history is clarified, the answers become more suitably informed, end quote. So yeah, that's a lot of the reason why I read this and why I'm sharing this is I think it's important to be informed about what happened. And a lot of times with like stuff about Nazi Germany, like we hear, you know, never again, that quote, like we never again do this. In fact, I didn't mention this, but there were some experiments being done in the U.S. that had questionable ethics by some of these people, you know, even by at least one of these people, even on our soil. So it's like, really? Did you really forget? Did you really never forget? And like, or did you just make yourself forget 5 minutes later? It's pretty crazy. All right, I'm going to end with this powerful quote the author has of a man called Gerhard Mashkowski. He was a Jewish teenager at the time of the war, who was spared the gas chamber due to his usefulness to IG Farben to work as a slave laborer for them. So the author asks him this question, quote, what matters? What lasts? He chuckled and smiled. He pushed back the sleeve on his shirt and showed me his blue ink Auschwitz tattoo. This lasts, he said, but it is also a record of the truth. Wow. Yeah, so I appreciate people who care about truth. I'm sad for this young man that his record of the truth was a painful situation for him, but I also like that he you know, acknowledges the truthfulness of some really awful things that happened. So yeah, the podcast being about deception and truth, you know, that's why I shared this, because we see sort of the deception of the government around what was actually going on, and in the interest of, you know, national power or whatever. And some really courageous people actually that pushed back, or actually this book, it tells so much more about like some of the investigation and some of the trials themselves, the Nuremberg trials for war crimes, which, by the way, I forgot to mention, but this building is the Palace of Justice in Nuremberg, where many of the trials, if not all, at least there were some different sets of trials that happened, but where they took place. So I chose that as my background. You can see that building. Anyway, I hope this was informative and maybe makes you curious to just ask questions, really, and especially of those with power. And if you can, hold them accountable. I think that's really important. And just to learn truth for yourself. So, yeah, until next time.